everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. Just a couple more months to go. All right. With that, I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 334 and would like to call Senator Winters and Courtney Thompson up and Sandy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 334 is coming to you at the request of Senator Jackie Winters. It requires that until June 30th, 2016, that medical assistant coverage of prescription drugs that are immunosuppressant drugs or drugs for treatment of seizures, cancer, HIV, or AIDS be covered.
Thank you, Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee. Thank you for holding a public hearing today on Bill 334. For the record, I'm State Senator Jackie Winters. I represent Salem, Monmouth, Independence, Almsville, and Turner. Simply put, Senate Bill 334 ensures fee-for-service Medicaid patients suffering with HIV/AIDS, cancer, seizure disorders, and immune suppressant issues such as transplant patients are able to receive the treatment that their medical practitioner deems appropriate. This bill keeps the decision-making in the hands of the physician and his or her patient. This bill does not impose any mandate on insurers or on those health plans serving our Medicaid managed care population. Colleagues, this body's commitment to ensuring patient access to necessary treatment goes back a long way, back to 1977, when Senator Bill McCoy championed patient access for our state's Medicaid patients, passing legislation that ensured no limit shall be placed on the type of drugs prescribed by a practitioner. Senator McCoy was concerned then, as I am today, that we not establish a system of second-class care for Oregonians most in need. As many of you are aware, the current Medicaid preferred drug list was legislatively established in 2001. The classes of drugs in Senate Bill 334 were part of a legislative carve-out that to this day protects patients' access to mental health, and that's not a part of this bill. In 2009, I led the session-long negotiations to authorize prior authorization of certain Medicaid prescriptions subject to the final word of the prescribing practitioner. As a result of those negotiations, we retained the existing protection and for refills and classes. Colleagues, you heard this last session that we were here. It's the same bill, just different number, same request. And I'm asking, there is a dash one amendment that somehow I think just got to you today. It was, I think, misfiled in LC, and we just found it and tracked, and I hope you have it before you.
What does the dash one?
It just makes a technical change to preserve the original intent of the original bill, and they had made a Scrivener's error, if you will look at it, and don't ask me how they did it, but yeah. So I'm just asking that you support the current legislation that is just the same as what I presented to you last session, which is Senate Bill, this session is Senate Bill 334.
Excellent. Questions? Very well-known topic to us all.
I'm sure.
Good afternoon, Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Courtney Thompson, Legislative Director for the Oregon Health Authority. I'm sad to be here today to oppose this bill. We have some problems with the policy behind this, and we've talked to Senator Winters and are going to continue to talk to her. We believe that Oregon right now is explicitly committed to what you've all heard a lot of times, the triple aim, which is improving care, improving patients' health care experience, and reducing costs. Each of these objectives will suffer if we let ourselves waste money by paying more than needed for equally efficacious interventions. So money wasted on overpayment for those interventions is then unavailable to purchase additional efficacious interventions to improve the patient experience and, by definition, would fail to reduce costs. For these reasons, carving out additional medications from those already successfully being included within the state's PDL will set us back from our ability to improve health and create a sustainable cost structure for our system. And therefore, we think it's bad policy. So we just wanted to make sure that we let you know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, there is a House bill, 2090.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that it was sent down to Ways and Means.
That has not yet had a work session in the House, on the House side.
Okay. And that has not. And there's work that is going on in 2090. Mm-hmm. That's why she said we're still talking.
Okay. Because it's my intent, I wanted to have the public hearing, but it's my intent not to move the bill. And so I just wanted to make sure, Senator Wynn already knew that, and there are conversations still going on.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
No other comments? That's all that was signed up to testify. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 334 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 379. Sandy?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 379 is in 2011, Senate Bill 238 was passed that directed the health authority to conduct a line-by-line review of rules adopted by the authority relating to mental health and addiction treatment providers to determine if excessive requirements and redundancies. This is an addition to that bill that is asking to limit the patient data that must be reported to the authority by the providers of mental health and addiction services, and it is requiring the authority to appoint a rules advisory committee that includes specified members. Senator Bates was supposed to be here, but I'm not.
Senator Bates was going to testify, but I see that he is not here, and if he comes in, fine. But Linda Hammond, would you come forward? And if he comes, we can have him, testify.
There he is
on cue. Please come forward, Senator Bates. We're on Senate Bill. I think I'll have you testify on all three bills. I'll open and close, open and close, and open and close.
Thank you.
All right. So right now we are on Senate Bill 379.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Alan Bates, State Senator from Southern Oregon and primary physician in that area. Gee, it seems like old times here, but a few of the faces have changed. I'm sorry to be a few minutes late. We're talking to some medical students across the road, and so I was tied up and had a jaywalk to get back. Please don't get me arrested. I've got sort of a trifecta for you here today with three different bills, and I'm going to try to introduce them very quickly to you and kind of give you a background of how they came about and why they're here. Senate Bill 379 is actually very similar to a bill that was put out 2 years ago. And it's a result of finding out that in mental health and some other areas in healthcare in the Medicaid population, we had caseworkers and people doing the work of counseling people, spending up to 60% of their time pushing paperwork and not being able to see patients. And Senator Cruz obviously knows about that. We did not run that bill. We set up a work group, which was unsuccessful at first, and then we had a little discussion with them, and Dr. Goldberg had a discussion with them, and they came back this time with actually a significant reduction of paperwork on a plan that I think will work. This bill kind of holds their feet to the fire, basically. Frankly, if that work group continues its work over the next few weeks and what they're suggesting goes forward as we expect it to do, this bill is unnecessary. We're asking you to hear the bill today, understand we have a significant problem with paperwork reduction, that it's something we can do legislatively or the agency can do itself. I'm sure they'll talk to you about it before the session's over here. I think giving this bill a hearing and a possible work session, if necessary, in the next couple of weeks is still important, so I'm asking you to hold the bill for that reason. But it doesn't take legislative action at this time.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, Dr. Bates, I would suggest, and for your consideration, that because we do have timelines here, that it might be a reasonable move to send this bill to the Rules Committee.
I will take that suggestion as a very positive suggestion, and I would suggest that we should do exactly what you've just offered. Thank you. Keep it alive. I have real faith that the agency is really moved on this, but I would just like to keep this in play just to make sure it all is completed as we expect it will be. Thank you for that suggestion, Senator Cruz. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, I will temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 379, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 375.
Madam Chair, and
just a minute. Sandy?
Actually, Madam Chair, Senator Bates can do a better job since he has the amendments.
All right. Oh, you have the amendments. So you let us know what we're dealing with.
I would assume we're looking at the 375-3.
Just reintroduce yourself for the record.
Senator Al Bates, Southern Oregon. This and the next bill you're going to hear are the work of a consensus that was achieved over the last year and a half with working with emergency room departments and physicians who take care of stroke patients across the state. It was an education to me to find out that across the state we actually have a rather robust system of telemedicine for dealing with stroke patients. We have at least two levels of care given, which are appropriate for the size and settings of those hospitals. We have in this state an unusual number of strokes compared to other states. We have a higher incidence per population of strokes than other states do. Our outcomes, however, are worse than other states. So setting up this system to assess those situations and get better at dealing with strokes is what we're trying to do here. You will hear a discussion about two basic ways of dealing with strokes. One, of course, is you have to recognize it and get to the appropriate hospital to be treated. And for many hospitals, that means doing something called drip and ship, which is kind of a nice way of putting it, that you give them a stroke patient, once you've found that it's not a bleed but an ischemic stroke from a blood clot, give them something to break that blood clot up if you can, and you ship them as quickly as you can to a major stroke center for treatment. That system's been set up, but what we don't have is the data from those systems. We don't know how well we're doing. We don't know how fast we're getting those patients, what the outcomes for those patients are. So what this bill does in a very simple sense, it starts us on the road to measuring those outcomes, learning what those outcomes are, and then sharing that information amongst ourselves so we can get better at what we're doing. Because as I said earlier, we have a higher incidence of strokes per population in the state than other states do, and yet our outcomes aren't the best. They're middle or lower. We want to deal with that, and this is a way of going about doing it. And you'll hear more about the system directly from those who are going to follow me here. They'll walk you through it. There's no one else? Well, hey, I'm the guy. Didn't want to bore you. I thought we had people coming
in. Oh, no. Yes, we do. Okay. All of a sudden, I got a new list. I just had you on it, and I thought, oh, dear.
If there are other people who aren't here, I can tell you about it. But I'd rather have them walk you through it and have an opportunity to see what that looks like.
Madam Chair, I like the Dash 3 a whole lot better than the original bill, so good job.
We made some real changes, okay? And I think that's how you get to consensus. It was a lot of hard work and a lot of drives to Portland and getting people together. And I would tell you, it was a real eye-opener to me as a physician how much the state's doing right now for stroke patients. It was just amazing. And I would tell you that I think the biggest problem in dealing with strokes as far as independent physicians are concerned and people at ERs is the fear of giving a blood thinner, a blood clot breaker upper without getting yourself in trouble with a bleed suddenly and having something happen. Having an ability to talk to a neurologist who specializes in strokes directly with you and the patient, make the diagnosis, decide what to do and do it immediately is really, I think, will change this. What we see in our state is a fewer number of people receiving those anticoagulants than other states, and I think that's where our problem really lies. This should help us get there.
Awesome. Okay, I'll temporarily close public hearing on Senate Bill 375 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 728. Dr. Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Alan Bates, Senator from Southern Oregon, again. This is also a consensus bill. I'd like to point out that building a consensus amongst physicians is worse than hurting snakes, okay?
By farmers sometimes.
Yeah, it was really a battle at times, but I think we got there and got there in a good way. We have a state trauma system in this state that 25 years ago, 30 years ago, was probably the best in the nation. We took information from the Korean and other wars about how to deal with trauma patients quickly. We had a system set up that stratified hospitals by their abilities. We have Trauma 1, Trauma 2, Trauma 3, Trauma 4 across the state. But we didn't fund that properly. There were concerns about what the outcomes from that trauma system was as the system slowly started to deteriorate over the last 5 or 10 years. What we did last session, you may remember, was we started for the first time in almost 10 or 15 years collecting data again on the trauma system in a reliable way, got our first trauma report out in many years, got a good look at what the state's doing as far as trauma is concerned. This bill places in statute the State Trauma Advisory Board, commonly called STAB. I know it sounds, you know, sounds a little bit, but that's what it's called. And it allows us to really have that set in a way that it will be more of a functioning body. Right now, it's in rule. There's questions of how well it functions. This will bring it into a statute and allow it to have a central place where we can collect data, look at the data, make recommendations, see what we're doing with the trauma system itself. There is, I believe, attached to this a physical, so I expect this will need to go down to Ways and Means.
Yep.
And I expect to see it there.
And this is a dash one amendment, correct?
I'm sorry, yes, 728-1s. I'm sorry, yes. And again, you'll hear more. I think there's somebody else speaking on this. I believe you'll hear more from others on this also, but that's
people,
probably
yeah.
speaking what it does. And it's these are both bills that are important steps in the right direction. Several years ago, we had an evaluation of our emergency medical system here in the state. We got about a D plus or a C. It was not good. A lot of that was lack of reporting. A lot of it was a lack of coordination amongst emergency rooms. These two things are first steps towards that. We ultimately, in the next session or two sessions, are going to have to bring this all back together, get them out of the silos and work them together again. But we have to fix the silos first. And this is the first step in doing that.
Great. We don't have the fiscals on the amendment. So just to let you know that there's no way we can move these bills today if we wanted to.
I didn't expect to move today. I just wanted a hearing.
Okay.
Work session. I expect that you'll have the physical very quickly, and at that time we would look forward to seeing these in Ways and Means.
Yes, Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Bates, on 375, the underlying bill, is that bill not needed to allow CCOs to be on the exchange?
The underlying bill was this is obviously a gut and stuff. There is another bill that speaks to that. And we are now looking at whether or not we actually need a bill to do that. Those CCOs that have commercial licenses and appropriate reserves or an advantage plan, we believe can probably join the exchange as they are now. We are finding that out as quickly as we can.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will, I think we're done with you.
Thank you.
And with that, I'll leave. We'll continue with Senate Bill 728 and call up Patty O'Sullivan and Mel Cohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have to get to another meeting, so I appreciate you being done with me.
If only that were true, right?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patty O'Sullivan. I'm representing the Oregon Association of Hospital and Health Systems, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 728-1. As Senator Bates had mentioned, both of these bills, and I'll also be testifying on the other one, have been a long time in the coming. When I first joined the Hospital Association, I heard that, you know, the trauma system, the EMS system, was in trouble. I didn't know what that meant. As these meetings took place and we really looked at things, Senator Bates mentioned that he had learned a lot. I learned a lot too, and I think we found out it wasn't that the systems were in trouble. The systems were out there doing what they needed to do. The problem is, if you want to improve systems, if you want to start implementing, you know, best practices, the first thing you have to do is fund the state agency that has authority over those systems and authority to improve those systems. And you also have to collect and use the data to help those improvements. And last session, Senator Bates was able to get some money for for Mel's programs, and that was a great first start. So we started meeting in the interim to say, what now can we do? And in the trauma system, the one thing that we wanted to do was the STAB, the State Trauma Advisory Board, was in rule, yet it was sort of the parent committee of a number of the other committees within a, you know, emergency medical system. And it was only in rule and not in statute, yet it was referred to in statute. It made no sense. So we needed to get it in statute. We started meeting. Some of the membership was changed, but the dash ones, I will be glad to go over those with you. It's really pretty simple. Section 1 sets up the STAB, and it started to mirror what was in rule, and then some of the membership changed, and I can let you know that there was a trauma surgeon added, there was a trauma coordinator nurse added, a trauma program manager nurse added, a trauma surgeon added, and a couple of other things, and they were divided into the levels of trauma hospitals. As you know, we have two level one trauma hospitals in the state, and that's OHSU and Legacy Health. And then we have a lot of level twos, and then we have threes and fours. And so we tried to get a broad representation both from the levels of hospitals and from rural, urban, and suburban hospitals. And so the makeup of the committee reflects that. Basically, the only other thing that it does do, and which they felt was really important, is on page 3 of the dash 1 amendments in line 8, it says that the Trauma Advisory Board may establish a quality assurance subcommittee for the purposes of providing peer review support to and discussing evidence-based guidelines and protocols with the members of the area trauma advisory boards and trauma care providers located in this state. And the purpose of that is to be able to do some sort of televised or other sorts of electronic training and sharing of information to all parts of the state so that they don't necessarily have to come all the time to the Valley, and that they will kind of do case reviews and what went wrong, what didn't go wrong. So we were very pleased that they put that in there. And with that, I will turn it over to Mel and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the director of the Public Health Division and the State Public Health Officer, and I'm really pleased to be here today testifying and providing you with some information about this this bill. As Patty said, and Senator Bates also said, this has been a long but I think very fruitful process of bringing together the stakeholders in what's really a very complicated system, but a system that, frankly, we all depend on to save our lives if we ever need those services. Oregon was really in the forefront of the nation back in the 1990s when some very, very visionary legislation was passed, and this body played a key role in making that happen. And now we really want to build ourselves up back to that level again, and I think this is a good step forward in doing that. I think Patty's already spoken to the changes in the membership of the board. I think this making the board a more official body in statute is totally appropriate, and I think will make everyone feel more comfortable moving forward. The quality assurance issues that that Patty mentioned as well, I think also something that we absolutely should be doing. So I think this is really a good step forward for us, and I'm delighted to be here to have been a part of this process. I want to thank Senator Bates for his leadership, and Hospital Association, the other stakeholders, Heart Association, so forth, and who have played a role in this, Ambulance Association. I probably should have started down that list because I will leave some folks off. There was a very long list of folks, and they were all critical to success here. So with that, I will stop.
Great, and you might as well just stay there because there's no one else set up to testify. But is there any questions at all? There's no opposition to the bill, so it looks like we will be moving it forward as soon as we get the fiscal. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 728 and open a public hearing, reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 375. And Stephanie Tamasweet, you're also here. on this bill. And Mel, you're there too.
Yes, I'm just.
Okay, get the right.
Switching gears.
And Stephanie, are you going first? Yeah, okay.
And I was quickly making one edit from the Public Health Division to my testimony. So before we submit it, I'd like to change that correctly, but I was scratching it on there for you all. Members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Stephanie Thomas-Sweet, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association, and we are here in support of the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 375. The American Stroke Association is a division of the American Heart Association, and we're dedicated to improving stroke prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation through research, education, advocacy, and the development and application of scientifically based standards and guidelines. You've heard from Senator Bates already a little bit of background on this bill. We've been part of the process for the last, really, 2 to 3 years from when the process officially started, but we've been involved in stroke care for the last several decades. And I'm excited to be here today after the accumulation of a lot of work and collaboration and you know, blood, sweat, and tears from the lots of folks working on this. Very simply, I'm here to talk about what is a stroke and why do we need this bill. Stroke is a brain attack, and it's an emergency, and it's essential that when someone has a stroke, they get emergency care. There's a phrase among stroke providers that time equals brain, and with every second, brain is lost. So knowing the signs and symptoms of stroke, getting the right treatment, and getting the best care as quickly as possible are all essential for a great recovery and survival. These are some of the statistics that I want to change for the written testimony. Stroke is now the fourth leading cause of death in Oregon, as it is nationally, and we have the 11th highest stroke death rate in the nation. Many people who do suffer from stroke suffer from significant disability, and stroke is the leading cause of preventable disability in Oregon. Just a couple statistics from Oregon is that 1,800 Oregonians died from stroke in 2007, and in 2008, there were more than 7,000 hospitalizations in Oregon due to stroke. The average hospitalization cost is about $26,000 per stay, totaling more than $193 million. So the economic costs are really great to the healthcare system. From our perspective, more importantly, they're huge for the families and friends and caretakers and individuals who suffer from stroke and are caring for their family members and loved ones. There's a lot of great work happening on stroke, and that's outside the legislative process. Within the legislative process, we're a part of the Oregon Stroke Network, which is a collaboration, a group of folks working across the state, stroke care providers, rehabilitation folks, and really the experts, stroke neurologists, working to collaborate and help improve care for stroke patients. We've been working since 2006 on improving care. We have a conference every year where we bring together stroke nurses and providers and do our best to really collaborate as effectively as possible. And while that work is really great, we simply just can't get as far as we want towards improving the care for stroke patients that we need. Simply just volunteer efforts alone are not enough to get the data that we need to know what systems level improvements, and we just don't have the resources on hand. Senator Bates already talked about the report that was done in Oregon in 2009. We got a D on that report, and part of that was for our lack of support and funding for stroke systems of care. So I'm going to let some of the other folks talk the specifics of the bill. Very high level, it creates a stroke care committee, and it will designate a database that would get us the information that we need to really make the levels of care that we need. I do have reports for those of you who are really interested in seeing all the levels of detail that you would like on what those data systems would be tracking, what it would look like, and what kinds of improvements and information we can collect from there. I won't talk you through those details today, but I do have those if you're interested and can follow up with more details. So we're thankful to Senator Bates and to the others who have been working on this, and we strongly urge your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, for the record, I'm Patty O'Sullivan. I'm with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I'm here today to overwhelmingly support Senate Bill 375, the Dash 3 amendments. Stephanie gave you some statistics. My mom was one of the deaths in 2007 that she gave you the statistics for. She had a massive stroke and made it to the hospital in time and had TPA, but still did not make it. So this is sort of near and dear to my heart as well as part of my job. So the bill actually does three things. It creates a stroke care committee. We have not had one prior to this. It creates some data requirements, which I'll explain to you. They're not new data requirements, which was very important to us. And it also sets the duties of the new committee and for OHA in developing a stroke care program. On page one of the dash threes, it talks, as you can see, about the different makeup of the committee, and it talks about one member that must be from a certified comprehensive stroke center, and then one must be from a certified primary stroke center. I just want to give you a little bit of data. We just, in this state, had the very first comprehensive stroke center certified. OHSU just got their certification. And we have another hospital right behind them. So we will have two comprehensive stroke centers, and I think that's pretty unusual for a small state. We also have another 14 hospitals that are designated as primary stroke centers. And we have 16 hospitals in very rural areas that do telestroke and have gotten that that ability to do that. The rest of the hospitals, whether they're, you know, are either working on becoming telestroke, working on becoming primary, but still all of them have the ability to, and I love this term, to drip and ship. We all say it when we can because it's kind of a cute term. So you give them the TPA and then you move them to a higher level depending on the level of stroke that they have, or you use your telestroke abilities to treat them right there in your own hospital. So we have quite a comprehensive system here in Oregon. So it develops the committee, and the committee's job specifically is to at this point is to take the data, which I'm going to tell you about, analyze it, and give recommendations to the Public Health Division for prevention and treatment of strokes, identify potential interventions to improve stroke care, meet the objectives of the emergency medical services and trauma system that are related to stroke. And what they will do is most of the hospitals, in fact, at this point there are 31 hospitals in Oregon that already put stroke data into a common system. One of the important things for us as hospitals was no new systems, please. We already use this system, and the data is in that system. The state will become a super user of that system and be able to extract the data within the confines of the confidentiality listed in the bill. And they'll be able to use that, and the committee will use that to do the work that they need to do to better help stroke care in this state. Like I said, 31 hospitals already put data in there. And what this bill mandates is that the comprehensive and the primary stroke centers will be mandated to continue to do that. Others do it voluntarily, and the bill encourages them to continue to do that. And, of course, we as an association will encourage them to, and for everybody else to hopefully start entering what data they have. They may not have that many strokes annually, and so it's not a system that they have readily available. But we'll be encouraging them to start and begin to do that. And we hope within the next 2 years that we can just say all the hospitals are doing it. But the 31 hospitals that do enter data into the system represent 90% of the data. So the other hospitals, as you can see, are very small and don't have a lot of information. But we're working towards that. We didn't want to mandate any small hospitals at this point with everything else going on in healthcare reform to do yet another data system. As you go along in the bill, that talks about what OHA, Public Health, will be doing, and Mel can talk about that, but I did want to bring your attention to page 4, around lines 22, And in keeping with our healthcare reform and coordinated care organizations, we made sure that we put some stipulations in there that the department and the committee will facilitate communication about data trends and treatment developments among healthcare providers and coordinated care organizations that provide services related to stroke care, and E, provide stroke care data and recommend improvements for stroke care to coordinated care organizations. We wanted them to be involved in this, but we weren't sure exactly what their role will be since they're not quite up and going. But we knew that whatever data we would garner from and whatever, you know, information and improvements we would garner from the data needed to be given to the coordinated care organizations who have the most vulnerable population within their organizations. So with that, I will turn it over to Mel.
Thank you, Chair Mona Sanderson, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn, Public Health Director and State Public Health Officer. I think I only have a few things to add to what my colleagues have already said. I think they've given you a very clear picture of the bill, and again, I'm really delighted that we're moving forward with this, and it's really the leadership, and these folks both played very important roles, as well as Senator Bates, really, in continuing to move this ball forward. As a state agency, I think we were asking ourselves the question, what can we do to help? As you heard from Patty, there's a lot of activity already going on in the state that's very, very positive. So what can we do to leverage that, to expand it, to really make sure that we have a system of care and not just a few, you know, great places in the state, but something that really is gonna meet all of the needs that that the state has around this? And this kind of quality improvement activity, I think, is a very, very helpful way to do that. We can't do that kind of quality improvement without good data, and the solution that we hit upon, again, makes total sense, minimizes the burden of reporting around these data because the hospitals are already reporting this information, just allows the division to have access to it so that we can analyze it and give that information to the committee for their review and recommendations. So I'm pleased about this. I think this is a step forward for us. I would expect probably in 2 years from now, we will probably have some other recommendations emerging out of this committee that we will want to be talking about with this this body, but I think this is really a very solid step forward, and I'm very excited about it. So with that, I will stop.
All right. Well, that's all we have. There appears to be no opposition to the bill. So as I said before, I think that once we get the fiscal, we'll send it down to Ways and Means. And any other discussion, comments? Great. Thank you very much, panel. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 375 and reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 379. Linda, Hammond, will you come forward?
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, my name is Linda Hammond, and I'm the Interim Director for Addictions and Mental Health, and I'm here today to talk to you about Senate Bill 379. What I want to say from the beginning is that we've been doing significant work over the past 2 years. Since the 2011, Oregon Health Authority has been working with providers to address the underlying issues that are being talked about in 379, and Senator Bates did allude to that. We began this work by forming a larger committee and taking a look at the entire structure of our what we know as our ISSR, which is our Integrated Services Rule, which oversees our rules of operation and data, and also the licensing. Sorry, am I too loud?
Too close.
Too close, that's all.
Sorry, I'm taught to speak up when I...
It's fine, these are just really sensitive microphones. That's all.
The first work group met several times to review the applicable administrative rules, and they came up with 109 specific things that they wanted to change in the rule structure. We determined that about 55 of those could be done immediately, and so those were immediately taken under advisement and changed. And we had other parts of the rules which had other implications, including federal law and Oregon Medicaid law as planned. So we had to have a bigger picture to address where those are concerned. But we didn't stop there. We, following that first committee, we formed a new committee in November, which was a smaller, November 2012, which is a smaller committee made up of stakeholders representing coordinated care organizations, community mental health programs, providers, and OHA to really identify what could we do immediately to reduce the administrative burden and what steps could were within scope and we could really act on to see timely change. And to understand the scope of the ISSR, it really does provide the minimum standards set for the certification of providers, as well as defining the standards for reporting patient data. So it primarily has those two areas of responsibility. Since the smaller group has met, this group has been successful in continuing to streamline and clarify the scope of the ISSR. And this has resulted, again, in significant reductions, I believe more significant than the first set of reductions we made. And we've taken down the administrative burden for providers in some situations where a provider would need a 10-page assessment where when an individual came in. We've taken down the requirements to be a one-page assessment when they first come in. And it's reduced paperwork at the start of services by 80%. So reducing the screening required at the beginning of the process. And so really speeding up the way and the time that providers get to work with clients and also how quickly a client can start services. OHA is very thankful for this opportunity to do this streamlining and the legislature and Senator Bates specifically for helping us set these parameters and move this work forward. SB 379 would direct AMH to develop OARs that would require all Medicaid providers to comply only with the minimal federal requirements for documentation of mental health and addiction services. This bill aims to address real and perceived burdens associated with the ISSR. Currently, all Medicaid behavioral health providers are required to be certified within the by AMH, so that also falls in under the ISSR. But the specific rule is talking about the data component of the ISSR. We've been working diligently with a diverse group, as I've already told you, about streamlining this. OSA believes that through the work, OHA believes that through the work outlined in SB 238, we've been able to address considerable misunderstandings from community providers and really streamline things. The new bill speaks to patient data. However, there's been a tremendous scrutiny on the state over the last 3 years, and specifically regarding documentation burden, so clinical supervision, client orientation to program policies. So that also falls within the scope of AMH. If AMH is limited to collecting data on clients served in the public funding behavioral health treatment programs across the state, there could be some impact to those things that we do. So having the data that we need to be able to assure the oversight of the programs is something we just want to bring forward as something to consider as this bill continues to move forward. Also, we have to look at possibly an unintended consequence related to the data needed to be collected under the requirements of the United States Department of Justice, because they have set forward specific data requirements. So again, that would be something we would like to think about or have to think about as we continue to collect data from our service delivery system. On saying all that, Oregon Health Authority is committed to exploring opportunities and streamlining and integrating standards that will allow clinicians to spend more time delivering services. We are also committed to ensuring the adequate standards to safeguard the health and safety and to maintain clinical quality are in place.
So we really want to balance out all those things with the minimum data in the most efficient way at the appropriate time and making sure we have those tools in place.
Thank you. Any comments? And there's no opposition to the bill? I know that Senator Bates wanted to send this bill to rules. And sometimes that's hard to do. What is your commitment or time frame? I'm not sure, since Senator Bates isn't here, I know he said he wanted to make sure that this was done. What can you do between now and April 18th?
Chairman Sanderson, actually in the second work group that I talked to you about, the smaller work group, they've done their first phase one report, which reported out the changes that they were already made. By the end of this month, they will be doing their phase two report, which tells you and completes the work for this committee in a way that outlines what the next steps would be as we continue on with as a state to monitor these systems and to have oversight. And I think that's what Senator Bates was referring to as he said that the work we're doing over the next 2 weeks, they're in their final meeting phase as to what the agreement is. And we've been pretty clear that this needs to be a group that's driven by the providers with the support of the agency to ensure we've got all the things in place we need. But I think you will see significant results out of this next report, which again they are proposing to put forward with their changes by the end of this month.
Right. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, thank you. I do realize that yes, DOJ has got you under a microscope. I understand that, but I thought that I'd use this as an opportunity to say that if we were doing a better job of community-based mental health, that microscope would eventually go away. And probably rather quickly if we could demonstrate that we are putting the resources where they want us to put it. So I just thought I'd throw that on the table.
I want to thank you for the work that you are doing. And I also want to thank Senator Courtney for putting mental health at the forefront. And I'm really hoping that the Ways and Means process will be able to fund some of the things that we really need in this state. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, no one else to? That's it. That's it. Okay, so I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 379. And, Sandy, we don't have anything else.
Not today, Madam Chair.
We are adjourned. Okay.